And now, here's your host of Shaping Success, Wes Tankersley.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to Shaping Success. Wow, sounds like my radio voice there. I was trying to use that. It is back again with Robert Watson. It is Wednesday with the Wednesday edition, and we are talking about his book, Ars Victorious. He just let us know that he has it in his hands, and I got my Giants gear on because we're going to be talking a little bit about baseball, one of my favorite things to talk about.
Absolutely. You were saying radio voice, and I was always making the joke that I have the face for radio.
Whatever. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, man.
That's it. So I told you I would tell you my tech story this morning. So I'm actually cooling down this morning, and my watch goes off and tells me that my phone has said, it's time to get moving. You got to go work out.
Yeah.
And I'd finished my run 25 minutes ago. So let's not worry about AI taking over quite yet.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I can't even figure out what time it is. Yeah, we were talking a little bit beforehand because, you know, technology is kind of a weird thing. I feel like we always get a late start. And part of that's my problem because I think I got to load up the eCam, this program that we use. And I think I'm just going to have to turn it off and turn it back on every time because when I do it myself, it's no big deal. I know what's going on. But when I have a guest coming in, I can't tell that they're having a hard time logging in. And that's why I always text you like 5 minutes before, hey, we good? And then I know when you say yes and we're not logged in or you're not there and like within a minute, there's something going on. So then I had to check back in and see. And it's fun stuff. But we make it work and we're late. I kind of feel like if we're not late, then we're not on time. Which is way against the grain with me.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So we're talking today a little bit about better is what the chapter is called. You said that you had the book in your hand. So what does that mean? Tell us what's going on with this book. We're just about there, right?
Yeah. So I went to upload it last night to Amazon. And I didn't realize I had to do the SEO and everything else when I was uploading it. Like, give us the 7 keywords, tell us your category. I mean, it was this whole deal. I thought, I've got the book in its paperback form and its e-form, and I'm ready to upload it. I've got all the graphics, everything's ready. You know, my guys would give me a little video on how to do it. And then I get there, and it's like, oh, you got to do all these other things. I was like, I wasn't prepared to do that. So it was okay, well, let me think about exactly what category I want it to be in. Let's make sure that I've got the right keywords for SEO. And I was just like, well, you know, that would have been nice to know before I started to upload, but that's okay.
Yeah,
but yeah, we're done.
That's a tough thing to do. Nikki, who is in the chat room, she does all the SEOs on the clips for me for Shaping Success and this and any videos that we put out. So that is a fun undertaking for sure.
Yeah, and I'm cool with it. It's just that this is the first time. So I actually, funny story, so I actually got the book on Sunday night for my formatter, and I looked and I opened it up and there was no copyright page.
Oh, no.
And I was like, what? Well, the ISBNs that are normally uploaded from Amazon and stuff, you know, you have to buy your own ISBNs or you use Amazon's. And if you use Amazon's, it can't be used anywhere but on Amazon. So then I had to go back and redo the copyright page, send it back to the formatter, and the formatter got it back to me, so it delayed us a day. But it's all the crap that you don't know because you're a first time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's important because you don't want to just sell it on Amazon. You want to, you know, get the hard copies out there and all that other stuff too. So you got to make sure you have that other one, right?
Exactly. And then I had to get used to the fact that the formatter decided to put lines in and little flourishes. And I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. Actually did a fantastic job. But again, kind of like I got my manuscript back and I went, what's this?
Right.
Okay, cool. You know, so again, it's like it's rookie stuff is what I call it. You know, yeah, all the stuff that you've never learned.
This isn't the last book that Robert's going to write. So you'll know next time.
Oh, yeah. I actually have a novel that will probably be out this summer.
Very nice.
So that's right behind it. But, it, you know, the rookie stuff leads us into the story, perfectly into this chapter, right?
Yeah.
Because it's about being a rookie head coach of a Little League baseball team. Now, I had been an assistant coach for 2 previous seasons. We had went to the World Series. World Series, you know what that means, at the local level, right?
Yeah.
We had went to the World Series the previous year, and then I had decided to step in as a coach. And for the first time, I had to draft players and do all that stuff for myself, right? And again, being a rookie coach, I didn't know the players. I didn't know a lot of things, so I had to learn the process. And it is quite a process, even though for Little League, you think it's no big deal. Well, and then you got to get into a coaching stream with the kids, and it's an entire project, as you will soon find out with your little one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I coached baseball for quite a while. In my teaching career, I was a head baseball coach at one school, and then I was the head freshman baseball coach at another one. Coaching in general is just it's an interesting undertaking anyway. And I never coached at the Little League level, but I've got a feeling that I will have to. Or not have to, but I will want to with Nolan, my son, because it just, he's interested in that stuff and I'm interested in that too. But I think it'll be quite an adjustment even doing that, because it's different when you're not playing. And I think that a lot of kids, like, that's the tough part about it. And this is off topic. I mean, it's on topic, but off topic. But like, you learn as a coach differently about those kids and why you play them where they do. And Little League is different, you know, just like teaching, like elementary school when you teach, and Little League, I would consider it kind of like elementary school. You can't teach those kids the same way that you teach a high school team, because the high school team already has the skill developed. And so now you're polishing, where with Little League, you're actually teaching them the skill. So I always shied away from elementary school because I wanted to polish. I didn't want to teach.
Well, you know, fundamentals were, it reminded me of Coach Jimmy Johnson when he came in to take over the Cowboys. He said, you know, the assessment of his team, he said, we can't run, we can't tackle, we can't hold on to the football, but other than that, we're a pretty good team.
Right.
And he was joking, of course, because he said, what I major in is the fundamentals. We get the fundamentals right, everything else will take care of itself. So I drafted quality kids that I knew were good kids, but their fundamentals sucked. They were terrible. Right. They couldn't field. They couldn't keep their eye on the ball when they're, and they couldn't throw the ball straight.
Yeah.
So we spent our 12 game season getting better. The entire concept for me was everybody got into the playoffs. It was a round robin. If you lost every single game, you got in the bottom of the seeding. Right. No big deal. So I looked at this as, OK, here's the job. The job is to get better every game, not to win, but to get better. If you could materially see the kids getting better, you were fine. And so that's what I did. I threw thousands and thousands of baseballs to them, right? Oh, repetition over and over again, teaching them to keep their eye on the ball. I mean, you know, it's so amazing that you can actually catch a ball if you keep your eye on it. It's really amazing you can hit a ball if you actually keep your eye on it, right? And so this was just repetition after repetition after repetition. And it was a great story because we were 0-11 going into the last game, but we were getting better, right? Getting better every single game. We were getting better, and it was very hard for them to lose, but I basically rah-rahed them to the point where I said, listen, let me tell you something. Look at the contact. Look at this. Look at this. In our final game, we won by, I think, 3 runs or something. And, you know, of course, for us, it was just like winning the World Series, right? We finally won a game. But actually what that was the beginning momentum, because we went into the playoffs and we won the first playoff game. All of a sudden, the low seed, the 1-11 team went out and won the first game. And we won the first game like 5 runs. We didn't win. We destroyed them. It was really good. The next game was the same thing. We were 3 deep into the playoffs, right? Getting ready to go close to the finals, and everybody was looking. And we just kept getting better, and the kids could feel the momentum, right?
Right.
And I just said, let's focus on the fundamentals. Look the ball into your mitt, to the pitchers, throw the ball to the catcher, right? Keep your eye on the ball when you're hitting, over and over and over again. Repetition, repetition, repetition. We ended up in the World Series. We were ahead by 3 runs into the 5th inning. Okay. And you can imagine the coaches on the other side. Here's this rookie head coach with these guys who were not the best, who were literally tearing it up in the playoffs. You know, come on, a 1-11 team is in the playoffs. Yeah. We were seeded against the 11-1 team, right? And in the 5th inning, they were scared. They were like, holy crap, we're going to lose to the worst team. Well, we weren't the worst team at that point.
Well, you think and about like what happens with that is they start to coast, right? Like this, that team that's 11-15 thinks, hey, we got this handled. This team is 1-16, and it's like we've got this made. So they probably lost the fundamental groove or didn't think about it. Like I think about professional baseball in the same way. I'm wearing my Giants shirt because I'm a big Giants fan. They went to 3 World Series in like five consecutive years or whatever, 6 years. And the difference between that, and it's kind of like with the NFL too, like when the 49ers were playing the Chiefs this year, I was sitting there going, there's momentum to be had here, and they know how to win, and that's not going to be something that now they've figured out how to win. And so
right.
They've practiced the fundamentals, just like you said. They know how to win now, and that's the momentum that carried them. But how many times does a wild card team win the World Series now? Like, it's more common than not because it's the hot hand. It's the team that's figured it out at the very end of the season. And you look at, like, the Dodgers, which I hate, but I work with a bunch of Dodgers fans, and I'm a Giants fan, and if you guys don't know that, they're the biggest rivals, whatever. And they have the momentum. Like, the Dodgers haven't figured out how to get that momentum yet, so they keep signing all these high-end players expecting to win because they have all this talent, but the talent will only take you so far.
Mm-hmm. That's it. It was funny because I accidentally constructed a team, and I talk about this in the chapter, where my 1, 2, and 3 hitters were pretty good. My 4 hitter, got his cleanup. It was my 5, 6, and 7 hitters that were now hitting 600 in the playoffs, right? They became this part of the order that you just chewed you up as you were a pitcher, right? Because you thought, oh, I'm past, and I didn't change the order. I left things just the way they were because basically what happened was after they got the cleanup hitter out, they thought, we're coasting. No, no, you actually hit the meat of my order. My son was batting 5th, and he was at that point batting way over 500. Yeah. I didn't move him because it was so funny because the 1 through 4 hitters were getting on base and then the middle of our lineup was chewing people up.
Right.
And that was really what I was trying to accomplish. And all it was they were impeccable contact hitters,
mm-hmm.
right? They just made contact all the time. There went the ball. I mean, come on, in Little League, you make contact, you probably get on.
Yeah.
So, they just did a fantastic job. And we really just didn't have any easy outs. And that was only just repetition. These kids, this is all credit to them. And what's so funny was the parents at the end were all in the stands and they were loving it because they said, this is the first time my kid has actually enjoyed Little League baseball because he can tell that he's getting better.
Right.
Not that the wins, losses added up exactly the way they wanted to, but at the end, everybody knew they were getting better. And what broke down for us at the end was we just didn't have the arm talent. Mm-hmm. What we ended up with was short of pitchers at the end, right? The playoffs had depleted us. Right. Because you have pitch counts, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have anybody left. So it was like, but it was okay. It was a great ride, and it was a great testimony to fundamentals, an absolutely great testimony to fundamentals.
And I think it's amazing because that's what people don't see anymore. Like, I talk to my daughter about this all the time. It's like she just got done with a art contest at school, and she lost. And I can guarantee you that she didn't lose. But I'm not telling her that. Like, her drawing was probably the best one because I watch her draw, and this is not just a proud parent watching my daughter draw. I've seen the stuff that she draws. She's in 4th grade. It's amazing. I mean, she sat down and she drew this pig at the restaurant we were at. They give her a sheet of paper and color crayons, and she drew this pig and they hung it up on the wall. And it was like, just watching how far she's come. The thing is that she practices that every single day. And she comes home disappointed yesterday and she's like, the teacher didn't pick mine and everyone thought I was going to win and I didn't win. And she was so disappointed about it. And I said, so what? I go, it's one of those things that you have a judge and the judge is the person who decides what they like. It has nothing to do. And Nikki wrote down, art is subjective. And it's like, that's the thing. It's just like anything else. You can't control who's going to choose it. But the practice of that, when these guys go pro, people think that the number one thing that talent will take you so far, right? But like practicing every single day, knowing your opponent, doing those things, doing those fundamental things will make you better. I remember when I was in Little League, I'd never seen it before, but my baseball coach came out and his one of his drills was he threw the little golf wiffle balls to us over and over again. They weren't like anywhere in particular, but it was swinging the bat over and over again, making contact with the small target. And then you got better at hitting the hard target, which is a bigger one.
Oh, yeah. And the ball got so much bigger, right, when you saw it after that little golf ball thing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal. Of course, I ran across a Tom Brady interview last night that kind of lists this. And he says, the thing is, you can prepare. You can do the fundamentals. He said, and then the ball just doesn't roll your way. He right. said, you remember we were an undefeated team. And they beat us with a guy catching the ball with his helmet, okay, with one of the best guy defensive players on his back. He said, you know, it shouldn't all go your way.
Right.
He said, things are going to – that's the way it is. He said, probably had the best team, an epic run, and we got beat by the weirdest plays. But he said, that's the way it goes. He said, the next year, he said, you don't have a very good team, and you do exceedingly well because everything goes your way. He said, it's just life, just life.
Yeah. And that's what we have to lose. That's what we have to learn. And I love that. That's why I love the sport of baseball. So when I saw it this morning, I'm like, it's Little League we're talking about, but we can compare this to life in general. No matter what it is, you writing the book, we're talking about your book. Like, you didn't get it in the first shot. You didn't think that, like, and it's great because, like, you write a paper, that's what it is, right? You're editing over and over again. Did I put this word in the right spot? Did I make this phrase correct? Is that compelling? We make those adjustments when we're writing, and you didn't learn to become a good writer the first time.
Yeah, the editor, actually, when I just looked at it, because I had the book up to review the chapter, and the editor made an adjustment in there that I don't necessarily think is right, but the editor thinks is right. Uh-huh. And when you read the book, you're going to look at it and go, I don't think that's the way that's supposed to be, but that's what the editor said. And I just now caught it when I was looking at him going, okay, I think everybody understands, but that isn't the way I would have done it.
Right.
But that's the way the editor did it. And I'm like, oh, okay, who cares? I think everybody understands.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how editing can go. Like that, again, that's a subjective thing, right? Like, this is how your teacher taught you how to do this. This is how his teacher taught you how to do this. This is what we're doing. I mean, it's funny. I take this back to a story that my mom had written the pamphlet for my brother's business, like the instructional pamphlet about, like, whatever, you know, you're supposed to do this, that, blah, 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 the procedures right. of the business and all that stuff. And my brother hired an intern, you know, to go through that and rewrite it and get it, or not rewrite it, but just go through it and change it. And one of the things that she said is, like, who wrote this? Because there's a double space after a period, right? We were taught to do that when I was a little kid, or when I was younger, when we started yeah. typing, and they don't do it anymore. There's all these changes over time, but that was the way that she did it. And so it's just annoying, you know, like, things change over time, and you know, he may have saw it a different way than you saw it, and it's got to make the sense.
You mentioned the double space after period, right? Because I took typing class. Mm-hmm. And this is typing class back in the 70s, right?
Right.
It was a double space after period. And then I just remember, it was a couple of years ago, my AI software is correcting my work, right, for little jots and tittles. And it says, you need to be consistent about the spaces after your periods. And I'm thinking, I am consistent. I'm putting two. And then the AI software says, no. I'm like, really? We're only doing one now? That's when I figured out. It was a couple of years ago. I'm like, okay, well, fair enough. Okay. Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, there's so many things that we were taught that are undone by, you know, I look at it this way. I mean, like, the idea of the double space after that, kind of, like, in my mind, and I don't know, I'd have to look it up and see why, but I feel like it gives you more clarity between the end of a sentence and the beginning of a sentence because there's more space. Mm-hmm. But I can guarantee you some millennial didn't like typing the space bar twice. So now we get one.
Well, it was funny in the chat over there, Nikki's commenting about showing our age by taking a typing course, right?
Right.
Right. But number one, we knew we were going to college and we had to type our papers, right? And you could either pay a dollar a page back then, which was actually, that was a dollar when a dollar was a dollar.
That's a lot.
Not what it is now. Yeah, it was a lot. And, but the other thing was, the other side perk was, that's where all the girls were. You gotta remember that's, you know, so you went into typing class and you were like, my buddy and I were the only two people, because we were both going to college. We knew that. And we were trying to be smart and get ahead of it. And then we realized as we sat down, we went, hold on a second. There's two of us and 22 girls. This is not the worst idea we've had, you know?
Right. Oh, cursive. Jenny Christine says, cursive will look like another language to our kid, to the kids growing up. So, you know, it's funny. Like, I hear these stories about cursive. It's kind of the same thing. I hear these stories about cursive. And I always ask my daughter, I'm like, you're not going to learn how to, do you even know what this is? Because, like, I write, like, in a hybrid. It's like half cursive, half print half the time.
Yep.
And she's like, no, we're learning cursive. I'm like, what? Idaho's kind of behind the times, because I'm pretty sure, like, all over the rest of the country, that would be a good thing to dive into and find out. But cursive's on its way out.
Yeah, I print now. Uh-huh. So I have been printing probably for, let's just say, a long time. But I mean, I stopped cursive forever ago, because it just wasn't. Once I started typing, I had the first IBM computer way back when to go to grad school. So it made a huge impact, but I stopped writing.
Right.
Everything became printing after that. Even when you're making edits to other people's stuff, you don't do it in cursive.
Yeah. It's crazy, because I sit there and print. I think about that. Like, there's so many documents in this country that were, like, written in cursive. Are the kids of the future going to be able to read that? Or are we going to have a cursive interpreter?
No, it probably had to be a cursive interpreter, because they'll look at it and go, I don't have any idea what that is.
Yeah.
And do you remember the little things at the top of the chalkboard that actually showed you, remember, how to do your cursive?
Yep.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Funny the things you remember after all these years. Wow.
Yep. Well, I think the real key to this chapter is talking about how the fundamentals of what you do, you will never, you know, it's a great story, because 1-16, going through the whole process and ending up one game away from winning the World Series of the Little League World, or not the Little League, the League World Series, I guess is what we would call it. Right. It's not the Little League World Series. Practice is something that you have to do. You fail over and over again. And then when you master it or get close to mastering it, the failure starts to go away, and you take care of business by taking care of all the small things that you should have taken care of.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody also about, like, relationships and stuff. And she mentioned that she was having this one little challenge. And I said, okay, well then just push through the challenge. She said, what do you mean? I said, relationships are just like sports. As long as you're not making the same mistake over and over again, who cares? You learn from it. Well, you know, that hurt my feelings. I went, okay, get through it. Mistakes happen, you know, just keep pushing. And she was just looking at me like, I said, what are you expecting, perfection? Are you really expecting two people to be perfect for each other? That's nuts.
Yeah.
I said, as long as you're not making the same mistake, don't worry about it. And, you know, she just was like, you're letting things roll off you too easy. I went, oh no, I have to do that. You know, if I had to live with the cumulative effect of all my mistakes, are you kidding me? I would never fly. I wouldn't leave my room if I was trying to live with my cumulative mistakes.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. That's just life in general, like relationships and things like that. I think, you know, the reason why my relationship with my wife has lasted the amount of time it has, you know, 24 years in June, is because we are willing to compromise, to see past our flaws, to continue to keep going. And at that point, when you decide that you can't see past that anymore, that's when it's going to end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a guy who was talking about forgiveness, and he was talking about the one skill you need in relationships, and be honest with you, it's the one skill you need in life.
Right.
You need to forgive yourself, man. If you can't forgive yourself for a mistake, repeating a mistake is one thing, but forgiving yourself for error is key. Forgiving the other person for a mistake, especially when they don't know. Come on, man, move past it. And so, yeah, that's a big part of people being way too hard on themselves, getting way too much in their head. I would see guys, little kids, strike out, and they would just, you know, go to pieces. And I would like, don't worry about it. Do you understand that, you know, to get into the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, you only have to hit 3 pitches out of 10.
Yeah.
I said, this is not asking a lot, but reality is you're gonna have a lot of failure and you got to get used to it.
Yep. It's life in general. It's a game of failure.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound exciting? That should be on, you know, somebody's inspiration. Life is a game of failure. Oh, yep. Lord.
Yeah. If you can get that figured out, if you can be okay to fail and know that, you know, you're still successful because you at least tried.
We're not going to let you do the Hallmark cards, right?
Nope. Yep.
Thank you for 24 years of failure.
Congratulations. All right. Well, that is an awesome, awesome subject. I really enjoyed talking about that one. We will be back next Wednesday. I am actually going to go watch a baseball game this weekend, heading to Scottsdale to go see some spring training and get to see my beloved Giants. I somewhat do not want to go back to San Francisco until they can get that city figured out. So it's kind of nice to go to Arizona to not have to deal with that mess.
Oh, no, that's a matter of fact. Is that on the weekend you're going to be in Scottsdale?
Yeah, we're going to the Saturday game. We'll be there Friday through Monday. So.
Yeah, my son will actually be there. He's at Fort Huachuca, which is south of Tucson, and his girlfriend is in Phoenix. So he'll be up there for the weekend, the same place you are.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. The weather's nice. You'll love it.
Yeah. No bipolar. I can't say that anymore. Apparently bipolar is offensive to say it's bipolar weather. The weather changes here so much right now during the spring. It's amazing to see how that goes. So, you know, Two weeks ago, we had a snowstorm. It rained.
Yeah.
We had an earthquake and something else. Like, it was like, are you serious? This is the way that this goes. But
well, I'm glad you're getting so PC for us, Wes.
You know? Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's the way of the world. We don't want to get kicked out of our own homes because I wouldn't get kicked out of my own home, but you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, Robert, I look forward to next Wednesday. Everyone, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks to our Patreon and TikTok subscribers, Nikki, Anna, Michelle, and Frank. Until next time, I challenge you to find the shape of your success.